Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another episode. Spring is in the air and Easter is coming, though there is not much celebration here in mainland China. I honestly forgot it was even coming up until I was in Hong Kong over the weekend. I envy people working in Hong Kong, and they get both the holidays for the Western holidays and the Chinese calendar. So they're going to have Good Friday off as well as Easter Monday off. So a 4-day weekend while those in mainland China are business as usual. Okay, so today I'm just getting over the Pod to the People live podcasting event we had in Hong Kong over the weekend. It was a really fun time. Got to meet other podcasters and people in the audience, and I was interviewing Barrett Bingley from The Economist. We're still finishing up the episode. So while we wait, today we have a good friend of mine, Nick B from India. He's a professional negotiator who has helped me as well as many others get some good advice about business in China over the years. We also work together as organizers on Startup Weekend and also some e-commerce meetups and have gotten to be really good friends over the years. So take out your notebooks, everybody, and listen to some negotiating tactics from Nick on Chinese suppliers. All right. So thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Global from Asia. We are here in Shenzhen, China with Nick. So thanks for being with us, Nick, today.
Hi, I'm here. I'm Nick. And
okay, and then maybe you can introduce yourself to everyone here.
Sure. I came to China in 2009, in the end of 2009. And as most of Shenzhen is all about electronics and international trade, so I do the same thing, electronics and international trade.
Cool. And then mostly where you're buying from China and you're selling, where are most of your markets?
I originally came here to buy from China and sell to India. But as I kept doing business, things changed. I sell to India, Dubai, Philippines, and Ukraine, USA, and stuff. And then I eventually turned the tables and I also started selling to Chinese, importing stuff from UK and selling it to Chinese. So now it's all the ways.
Cool. It's definitely an interesting and crazy market here. So in previous episodes, we always talk about company structure and company setup. Do you have a Hong Kong company, a Chinese company, both, or can you explain your structure now?
Okay. Originally, again, I started with a Hong Kong company when I just came in 2009. But in 2010, I went in for a WFOE because in a year, I must say, I really realized that China has a huge potential to be tapped in. And I wasn't very sure at that point of time that if they would let Hong Kong companies have all the benefits, because I thought they might get stricter, but it did not so happen. So I went ahead and did my WFOE. And so I'm a WFOE right now. And I took my import-export license and all the trading licenses.
Okay. So for those listeners not sure, we haven't really covered WFOEs much. WFOEs are stand for Wholly Foreign-Owned Entities, and they are for foreigners or non-Chinese locals who want to open up a local Chinese company. So why did you open a WFOE?
The difference between a WFOE and a Hong Kong company is that a Hong Kong company can do most of the business, but it does not allow you to keep goods in your office. This was one of the primary reasons when I went for a WFOE, because it gives me the right to trade with China and also export from China. But if you're a Hong Kong company, you need to use some local forwarder or someone else to handle all the goods for you. Technically, you're not allowed to keep any stock with you. Because I wasn't trading and I used to get a whole lot of stock, I didn't want to depend on Chinese people keeping stock in their warehouses. And I wanted to avoid that risk, and I wanted to keep all of the stuff under my control. And to do all of that, I needed a WFOE, because only a WFOE lets you do all of that. And there are different kinds of WFOE, those services, WFOE and with trading.
Cool. I think we'll save that for another episode. Today we're talking about an interesting topic of, I called it getting inside the mind of a Chinese marketplace seller. I know you live right in the market one of the biggest markets in the world for electronics called Huachanbei. I'm a little bit further away personally. I'm still in Shenzhen, but I'm not in the middle of the market. So you live and breathe this marketplace. So I think you're a great person to have on the show and talking about that. So maybe you can just kind of get people some perspective of your daily life in Huachanbei.
Okay, for a lot of people, especially Western people, you might not like Huachanbei so much because it's like full of people. It's totally crowded. The marketplaces are full of electronics. You're just bumping into people all the time. You're waiting for lifts. You're meeting people with carts and loading goods, and there's continuous noise of tape around you. Yeah, goods
just,
being
just the elevator itself. I dread going to the market for those elevators.
Yeah, a lot of people do dread the elevators because you need to wait a lot for those elevators. But I love the action. I should say I love the action. The marketplaces are full of stuff to buy. I mean, there are too many things. But it's totally different from the way things are in the West. It's a little chaotic, I must say. But any specific questions for me?
Just like to kind of get the meat of the show started with that for anyone that hasn't been there, I think it's definitely worth at least one time to check out the Huachanbei. It's one of the biggest electronics markets, and it's right in the center of Shenzhen, right near Hong Kong too. So people could, if you get a visa, we have a lot of Hong Kong visitors coming to Huachanbei. So, you know, I think also you're from India, and I know Indian. I actually want to go one day to India, but I know Indians are good for bargaining. So I think before we start talking about bargaining with Chinese, how do you kind of compare quickly Chinese bargaining versus Indian bargaining?
Okay, I guess it should be more Asian. I think. Again, when I want to clear this out, that not all Indians are good bargainers. The ones in business are very good bargainers. So these negotiating skills passed over generations to certain communities in India who have been doing business very well for a long time. So it's not the whole of India that you paint in one large brush. Anyway, about negotiating skills, Chinese and Indians both want extreme benefits for themselves. Both of them have the same thinking, just that the way we both execute it is different. Indians are probably a little more irritating in the sense that they are more demanding, they're more outspoken, they place their demands right in front of you and say that this is what we want from you. And probably they're going to be extreme. This is going to be extreme demands, but they're going to place right in front of you. The Chinese expect the same extreme demands, but they're not as outspoken and as... They would say that this is like when I sell to Chinese, to give an example, when I sell to Chinese, a certain stuff that they can sell for 3 times the price, they don't buy from me for 1/3 the price. And I cannot pit one Chinese against the other. They would just simply, if an Indian, he would go and explaining that, oh, for all the reasons I cannot buy more than 1/3 the price. The Chinese would not do all that explanation, but he would just give you 1/3 the price and say, this is what I will buy it for. And that's it. That's it. He's negotiated you. And you, because he does not even talk or he does not even give you any reasons, there is no way to negotiate further. So he just says that and he leaves it there. And for some reason, they're very confident of getting the deal. They mostly know that foreigners are more, you know, they're more giving in. And the Chinese are just like, okay, they just sit with a straight face. And for most reasons, it's very tough for foreigners to guess, read their minds. And because they don't even speak much, that makes it even more difficult to guess what's going on in their mind. True. So,
silence is a good negotiating tactic. I think sometimes when people don't respond, then you start to maybe lower your price or get more desperate. So now I think we'll try to break down different bargaining ways. What would you say, like when you want to buy from a marketplace seller in Huachanbei? Or anywhere, maybe any Chinese factory. I know a lot of people might just buy on Alibaba or they're buying from their home country. What would you say is a starting point to get the negotiating going?
Actually, with negotiating is not just an art about communicating. It's also about you should know the stuff you're buying. What is the real value for this? Sometimes what happens in negotiating is, though you ask me a different question, but I would want to clarify this, that because we're discussing negotiating and you might use this so much, you might end up getting trapped in China and you might end up losing all your money because the Chinese, as I told you, don't speak so much. So if you ask for, like, it's a $10 stuff. If you ask for, say, $2, you might think, hey, the Chinese must be making a lot of money. Let me ask for $2. What happens elsewhere in the world is people would start giving you back comments. How can you ask that? They get angry on you. They get pissed on you. They tell you that this is my price. It cannot be, and stuff like that. That's how negotiation goes. In many cases, the Chinese would say either a no, or some would say, simply just keep quiet and say, okay, I'll do it. And you would wonder, I got a great deal. But what happens is when you see the final product, it's totally just worth less than $2. Mm. He gave you the same shed. I mean, they can do that. I mean, this does not happen elsewhere, that you can make the same looking stuff for $1.5. And you, when you really get to use it, you realize it's full of crappy shit that you got. So to negotiate, you should know if he says $10, you should know what is his BOM, what is his cost to make, what is the build of, I mean, the build of material. Yeah, BOM cost, what kind of materials are being used. And so you really need to know the field that you're in before you negotiate. So you know where to ask. Should you be asking 8 or 7 or 9? You know, so it really, negotiating is more about knowing your stuff than just plain negotiating, because here you don't get feedback. So it's more on you rather than, otherwise elsewhere they would give you feedback. It cannot be like this. They go on explaining things to you. Here people don't explain. So you have to know before you ask. Yeah.
Got it. So yeah, so understanding your product and your business. Also on previous episodes, others would kind of say the same, is to know, do your homework before you even start talking to.
Yeah. Really, you need to do, you really need to do your homework here.
So how about if you did your homework and you know it's the cheapest price should be $5, and they say $8, do you say $4 or do you say like $6? I mean, I maybe this doesn't even work, but I'm just kind of...
Yeah, but if you have done your research so well, then and you know it's 5, it's better to ask for 5.
Okay.
Rather than if you ask for 4.5 because you know it's not possible 4.5 and he's going to keep quiet. So now that's where you're trapped, because you asked for 4.5 and he's going to think, oh, it's 5 and I can really go down to 4.5 by cutting out. The moment you said 4.5, he's thinking in his mind, what do I cut out from this to make this to 4, you know? Yeah. So he doesn't give you anything back. He doesn't really complain. He's just keeping quiet and he's thinking in his mind, what do I cut from this? Yeah. So how do I cut corners on this and how do I change the quality so I can fit it in 4? And he takes the order. So if you know that the real stuff, and then you insist when you pay 5 that I would expect all of this exactly. Yeah. Okay, so you keep repeating that message that I would expect all of it, no cutting, and then you keep going on it. You don't say, you don't just expect that he's going to give you. That's what happens in the West or elsewhere. You expect the other person to supply exactly what you asked for. Okay.
Got it. So yeah, that kind of leads to the next point of pricing and quality. So yeah, I've noticed that too. When I bargain too low, they will make it work somehow by cheapening the materials or cheapening the product so that they can get that price. So I've seen some pretty low quality things. And then I remember when I would complain or others would complain, factory or the manufacturer or the seller would say, well, what did you expect for this price?
Exactly. That's one statement you would hear so many times in China, and you would be so pissed off at that point to hear that. They would just say, you, if you pay peanuts, you get monkeys. I mean, but then why didn't you tell me at that point when you were negotiating that you are, they just keep quiet. This is what it is different in China from the rest of the world. And this is where you get trapped, because everywhere else you would expect him to say, okay, I'll do it at 4, but I would cut these things. Yeah. Is that good enough for you? That's how it works. But here it doesn't work like that. So this is one key lesson that you learn.
I think that's like the highlight of this show is, you know, you think you got one over and you push that price down so low. But I think it's part of Chinese culture. They don't want to, they don't like to say no, or they can't do something.
Yeah, they don't want to. You are very aggressive. They're not like, they would softly just take it.
So they'll instead of saying no or losing face or losing business, they'll make it work, and then they'll cheapen the product or somehow find a way to make that work. And then they will also, they don't know what market you're selling to. Sometimes I think I've learned when I say I'm selling to the US, mm-hmm. they'll know it needs a higher quality.
Okay, now this is different again. I would say that they really don't have too many different qualities. They have like levels of them. And some factories would just say a no if it's like a very big factory. And they do have different price lists for different countries. This is something that you should know. If you say that you're from Africa, you get a different price list because the sales is, you know, they have different sales assigned for different regions. And each sales is getting one price list. She gets a price list that she works on. She keeps sending that price list to her target area of customers. And the manager knows the real price. That's how China works. And so they know that this product can sell for so much in this market. So usually on the higher markets, they would give a little extra, but then they would mark up the prices higher. Mm. So it helps me to be an Indian right now. So they assume directly that I want the cheapest of the price. So they just go directly to their cheapest price. Mm. And then I start upwards negotiating that I say, okay, add this good stuff into it and I want to make it better. But it still is lower than what they give to a foreigner. I mean, like someone in the West.
Yeah. I think also when we talk about quality, a lot of Chinese like to buy overseas goods, like in the US or Europe. And a lot of times from my blogs and other people talking to me, foreigners don't understand why Chinese buy American products that are made in China. One, I think, is cheaper because of the taxes. But the second is they know the quality is better. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times the quality in China is the lowest or lower quality, because of the standards and because of the price negotiations. Because the Chinese bargain it lower.
Yeah.
So the factories make it cheaper.
Yeah, for the local market, and then they make better quality for export. So it is a perception, and in some cases, because you know there's no clear one line that holds good for all the products, because we are talking too general.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's a very general topic, so we cannot give you one rule that defines all. It depends from products to products. Like the Apple is a different product. It doesn't matter where you buy an Apple, it has to be an Apple. Mm-hmm. Right? Though it is made in China. So
so we're kind of, next topic is called buying direct. I know we've had this conversation over dinners and drinks. Like sometimes we complain because we've both been selling to overseas buyers and they think that we're not as direct as buying from a Chinese. So this is kind of what I mean by this topic. And you say it well. Maybe you can kind of give your perspective of your experiences with that.
Yeah. Oh, this is very interesting. You know that many times you would think, I have seen this happening a lot because I've been selling laptop parts, and then I came to China and did a lot of research, and I really knew my stuff and I knew what is the right price. But when I would offer this to a Western buyer, he would still go on searching further because he would think, I'm not a local. This cannot be the best price. And then he ends up buying with some girl who's working out of her home on Alibaba. You know, she just doesn't have anything but just a price list and she's working from home. But he perceives that he's buying from Chinese. And maybe when he gives him a target price, like we explained so much before, they can give you any price lower than that. But they actually compromised on the quality. But you would not believe me.
Yeah.
Because I am a foreigner, and you would just take that and assume that you don't know what happened between, like example, if my price was $5 and you went with my $5 price to someone else, a girl or some sales somewhere, and said, I want 4.8 or something. And she would just do it 4.8. But you never checked the 5 quality. And you thought that the 5 quality must have been the same. You just assumed though. So buying direct is not, unless you have real, many things that you do on the internet, you are dealing with a lot of people. A lot of sales don't even know their product in China. They just have price list. Their bosses have told them that this is what you need to do. Every day morning they get up and they send an email to a lot of people. They know how to search out those emails and send an email to all those people. The bosses have given them the percentage that they can go down based on quantity. And they just keep repeating that same message. They don't know anything about the product. They're not really product specialists like you have in the West, where to make that sale, you need to be a product specialist. And usually that's how it was. But here people are not product specialists, unless some sales who have spent a lot of time in the industry. But most of them are very fresh, out of college, very excited. So you would see all the chats having hello friend, this, that. Because they really basically build on relationship building rather than product specialization on explaining the product. They actually count more on this.
Well, yeah, I mean, we only have so many hours in a day, right? And salespeople have to, you know, a lot of times focus on finding the right customers and building the business relationships rather than the product side. I think you said that really well. I had that experience too. Like, my American friends would think that the Chinese Alibaba sales girl was more direct than me, but a lot of times the sales department are just like middlemen themselves because they mark the price up. Anyways, buyer beware, you know, it's also, the price is not just the price, it's the quality and the trust, and there's tons and tons of stuff, but it's just an interesting topic. And then for you, like, when you bargain, do you bargain yourself? Do you have Chinese that bargain? Like, is it better to have Chinese bargaining with Chinese or the foreigner bargain with the Chinese? Like you said, you're Indian, so they give you a lower price. Yeah. Like, what do you advise people to do? Should they have like a Chinese assistant to help bargain for them? Or
In all my bargainings, I do my price negotiation myself. I don't let my assistant do it. And sometimes my assistant usually in the initial days, she used to get pissed off that I don't let her do the negotiation. Then I said, okay, let's try both. Let's not even say that we are from the same company. You try and I try. Let's see what happens, you know, how we get. And then because I would know the product better, so eventually I used to get better prices than her because I used to negotiate based on BOM and other stuff. And I usually would be a better bargaining. And then she used to just keep saying that, okay, someone else is this price and all that. And so I think it depends on how well you are into the product. I think if you know your product better, you are a better negotiator than the Chinese. Yeah. The Chinese can just get you many options, but they don't know the product. So you might be getting, again, the same thing, a lower quality stuff. So.
Okay. That's fair enough. So maybe we can give a quick example. So you said BOM a couple times. B at the end. B-O-M.
B-O-M.
Bill of materials. It's just sometimes I even say it the wrong way. But maybe you can explain, like, is the price the total price and then there's the bill of materials, or do you put a price each piece? Or when you're bargaining with them, you know the total price and you say for these components and these quality levels?
Yeah. To give you a case in point, like if you're doing a tablet PC, which is pretty common right now, then you know how much the LCD is going to cost you. And the motherboard or the main board that is there, that is usually manufactured by a different factory. None of the factories does all of it together. And then they have to put the cell, which is the lithium ion battery on it. And then they have to buy a touch for it. And then they have to buy the case. So there's a case factory, there's a board factory, there's a LCD supplier, and then there's a cell supplier. So you put all, that is your bill of material where you add up all these costs and you put your labor costs on them. You ask them, how much do you factor in for your labor? Okay. And how much do you want as profit? Then you ask them those questions. They kind of give you some figure, but they're very unhappy to share those figures, obviously. But then when you negotiate that way, you know, okay. And to really get into the depth of it, some Indians are so strict that they actually buy the goods themselves. They control it so much that they would buy the LCD at the best price. They would go and negotiate for the board and they would go and negotiate for the case and then just say, okay, now you put all of this together and how much do you want to charge me per tablet? And that's how intense it becomes sometimes. But
okay, I think that's a good... Yeah, electronics is something I never got myself involved with. I've heard some really bad stories from people with, you know, even iPhone cases, which isn't really electronic, to USBs being empty when it arrived in America, just the shell.
Yeah, because maybe they asked for too lower a price and they said, okay, it has to finally look like this, right? That's how they go. I mean, they just keep cutting on. Okay, yeah. It has to finally look at the like this.
Yeah. So I've heard all kinds of MP4 players. And so electronics are very, very, you know, I don't want to say dangerous, but you have to really know what you're doing.
Just to give you one example of how you can cut costs, you know, if you're in the electronics field and you're listening and you know electronics, on the main board itself, you have a USB connector. And to give you a very simple example, if that USB connector behind the USB connector on the board, you are supposed to have capacitors to protect you from overload. If you put something wrong onto your USB port, your board should not blow up. Now, there are these small capacitors, okay? And if you want to really cut down costs, you can just take them off. How many times are you going to plug in a wrong USB? So you would not figure out until you put in something like that, right? So, but you have cut costs. So the full stuff has all of that, and this does not. And now when you go to the connector quality, there are so many of these people who manufacture the metal connector. So when you look at it, the metal connector can be made of good metal, lower metal, cheaper metal, and then it will start breaking. Mm. The port will start breaking depending on the quality. It still is the same tablet PC, still same USB port on the outer. When you buy it, it's all going to look the same. The longevity and the durability is what is it. So that's how you cut costs in China.
Interesting. Thank you so much, Nick. This is a wrap of the show. I think there's maybe definitely some people that are enjoyed your talk. How can people reach out to you and your business?
Okay. I have a website that is chinaimportguide.com. And my email is contact@chinaimportguide.com.
Okay, great. And we'll put that in the show notes too. So if people want to read it afterwards. So thank you so much, Nick.
No problem.
And
thank you for having me.
Good luck in the marketplaces.
Sure, I've spent a lot of time here. Now I know. I've had all my pains already.
Exactly. I think maybe we all need a little bit of our pains, but hopefully this show helped avoid some for you guys. Thanks again. Have a great day. So I hope you guys thought that information was as priceless as I've thought about it. Again, I really hope people take it seriously. I have to admit, as an American myself, we are a little bit naive and spoiled getting the best quality from around the world. So when we try to buy from factories, we kind of think apples are apples and apples are oranges. So when we squeeze too hard on price and negotiate too low, some of the Chinese will make it work no matter what, and they'll lower the quality and other kind of substitutes. So feedback is always appreciated on the show. I know Nick also mentioned WFOE, or wholly foreign-owned entities. We are going to have a show on that in the future with kind of specifically about cross-border business between Hong Kong and mainland China. Keep on listening, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your week. Take care.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.